This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
The fourth point, which ties in, is the point from the Iyov Shir, which we have every Monday night, where Iyov has expressed a belief in the early stages of his argument, just like us, that we are functions of our environment, that our environment affects us, and that we cannot control our environment. On the contrary, the environment controls us. That's the view that Iyov puts forward at the beginning. And he's tackled right at the beginning by Eliphaz in the fifth chapter. And one of the things that Eliphaz says is, that's not true, because ki le'evil yare koa sufoise tomis kino. I won't go into the whole explanation that we did on Monday night, but very briefly, Eliphaz says, people don't die of heart attacks. People don't die of cancers. People die of things they bring upon themselves. The heart attacks is just a mechanism that the body uses for the death to take place. But the real cause is, there are two kinds of people. There is an evil who is killed by anger, aggressiveness, negativism, antagonism. The aggression within us, the angers within us, that kills us. That's destructive, self-destructive. And we get angry when we believe that we can't control our destinies. We get angry when we believe we're being controlled by forces beyond us and they're not doing a good job of it. That's when we get angry. When somebody else is controlling me, I get angry. Ufoise tomis kino. And the weak-charactered person, the person who's constantly persuaded and he goes this way and that way, not because his beliefs aren't in order, he has good beliefs. And we discussed on Monday, these are two kinds of people. The man with strong belief doesn't get angry. A man who really believes that God is the captain, a man who really believes that the Ribbono Shel'olam is control, what's there to get angry about? What's there to get angry about? You do your thing, you do your bit, you know what you're supposed to do, and you leave things to God. Nothing to get angry about. Anger, aggression, is all a function of lack of belief. And that kills. I often say to people, watch when you drive to work, watch the faces in the cars. Don't waste your time listening to the radio. There's much more exciting things to do. Watch the faces of the people in the cars. It's depressing. They're all angry. They're all angry faces. You don't see a face that isn't angry. And I was saying to a group of chief executives of large businesses the other day that you leave your personalities at home when you come to work. You leave your value systems at home when you come to work. You change. You come into some kind of monster as you walk through your office door. And some of them were getting a little bit upset about this and felt I was exaggerating. And another one saved me. He said, you can't believe what happened today. I was sitting in my office and my daughter came in to see me. First time she'd seen me at the office. And she took one look at me and she said, Daddy, why are you so angry? And I thought to myself, but I'm not angry. I've never been so relaxed at work. And it suddenly struck me, he says, that I'm different at work. That she didn't recognize me, that she'd never seen me like that. And when I asked myself, what are you angry about? I wasn't angry about anything. But we get aggressive because we don't believe that the Ribbono Shel Olam is in control, that he's running the show. We get angry. Anger and aggressiveness is a function of lack of belief. And Eliphaz says, that's your choice. If you want to believe in God, you can believe in God. And if you believe in God, you will be tranquil. And if you will be tranquil, you will avoid a lot of disease. That's your choice. Don't say you're a function of your environment. You control your environment by the way you see yourself. And you can have a person, says Eliphaz, who does believe in God, but still he does all sorts of wrong things, not because he believes they're right, but because he's easily persuaded, weak-charactered. Tomis kino, he dies of jealousies. He dies because he always believes the grass is greener on the other side. He always believes the reason for his trouble is something outside of himself. And he always believes he could improve his situation if he had what somebody else had. I had what he had, I would also be okay. And he dies from jealousy eventually. But what causes the death is the midos. The kind of person you are is what causes the illness. The aggressiveness, the jealousies, that's what eat up inside you, that's what makes you sick. And that's your choice. You want to be jealous? You be jealous. You want to get angry? You get angry. But if you want to believe in the Ribbono Shel Olam and live a different kind of life, that's your choice too. That's something we need to understand. That our midos, our personalities, are in our own control. We can mold ourselves. And lastly, on the Midrashic side, was the Midrash we used last night. The delightful Midrash of the trader who goes around the village shouting, "Who wants life? Who wants life?" And there are two interpretations to the Midrash. The one I took last night is that nobody came to him except one person, Rabbi Yana. The other interpretation is that everybody came running. They all came running. Why? Because we all like to believe that there is an object, a thing, that can change us. Look how many people make money out of promising the market that they have got something that can change you. Whether it's Coca-Cola, or it's medication, or it's gym, or it's a holiday, or it's an investment. It's all promising. Look at the advertising. Read the adverts carefully and see what lies behind them. What is the advertiser saying to you? "I have something that can change your life." That's what it is. And until we realize that they're all lying, they don't have anything that can change our lives. They have things that we can use to change our lives, but they have nothing that can change our lives. A holiday doesn't change your life. A drug doesn't change your life. Medicine doesn't change your life. Going to gym doesn't change your life. Nothing changes your life. There's only one thing that can change your life, and that is you. Nothing else. There are all sorts of things you can use to help you, but only you can change your life. And that's what he says when they come running. What does he do? He takes the Sefer Tehillim and he says, look what it says. Mi ho ishe chofetz chayim oyev yomim liris tov. Who is the man who loves life and loves to see good? Keep your mouth from talking evil. Don't become aggressive and jealous about people. Forget about what other people are doing. Just concentrate on your own life. But as we explained last night, there is a precondition. This medication, which isn't an object note, it's Netzoel Hashemcho. You've got to do it yourself. Nobody can do it for you. But there's a precondition, and that is you've got to be a person who is Chofetz Chaim. And that's why he starts off asking, Mi O Isha Chofetz Chaim, is there a man here who really wants life? And just as we said with belief, and what I told you that my Rosh Hashiva taught us, yeah, we all want life. But as I explained last night, we don't all want life. Because if we all really wanted life, we would eat only healthy things, we would relax properly, we wouldn't work so hard, we wouldn't smoke, we would do all the things that preserve life. But we don't. Why do we do unhealthy things? Why do we adapt unhealthy lifestyles? Because we would like life if it didn't cost anything. But when it starts to cost, we can make our own life. We'll manage without a little bit of it. So rather, let's have the pleasure. We're not willing to sacrifice comfort for life, never mind dignity. But mi o ish, is there a man? Here and there we might find individuals, hechofetz chaim, who really is willing to invest in life. He's willing to pay the price for life. He values life. Oyhev yomim, he loves days. Just let's take that pasuk in a very simple sense. Oyhev yomim, he gets up in the morning and he loves the day. He just says, fantastic, it's another day, I love it. Oyhev yomim. Liris tov, and what he loves is to perceive goodness in the day. Sure, there's going to be ugliness. Sure, there'll be negative things. But his joy is to find the good things. And we do that in life. We understand that. When we dig for gold, we love gold. We all love gold. But look how much ore you've got to throw out before you can get a little bit of gold. Look what we're looking at. The tip of a teaspoonful of ore in a wheelbarrow full of rock. A ton of rock. That's the ratio in South African gold mines. Tip of a teaspoonful of gold for a ton of rock, and you have to go down 4 or 5 kilometers to get it. We're willing to do that. We're willing to dig 4 or 5 kilometers into the ground. You have no idea how hot it is down there. Absolutely no idea. It's almost impossible to survive unless you train for it. Not almost. It is impossible to survive unless you train for it. In that stifling heat, we're willing to go down and to dig out a ton of rock to get the tip of a teaspoonful of ore from which to make gold. Because we value the gold. And if we valued the good in life, we would be willing to go through that same ratio of good to bad. If we saw the good as gold, not as good as gold. If we saw the good as we see gold, then we would be willing to go to the equivalent amount of effort and to cast out the equivalent proportion of rock, of negativity, of uselessness, just in order to find those few drops of gold. That we would be willing to do. But if we don't value the gold, we will not be willing to do that. Oyhev yomim lirois toiv. A person who loves days because he can find good in the days. And that good is worth so much to him that he's willing to go through all the negative experiences to find those little spots of delight, of happiness, of specialness, of sanctity that we have in a day. Whether it's the few minutes we spend davening, whether it's a small interaction between two people who care for one another, whether it's the discovery of an understanding of an intellectual concept, the sighting of a beautiful work of art, the seeing of a beautiful sight, whatever it is, just watching a beautiful sight. You don't have to go out of town. Sometimes you can watch a mother and a child playing with each other, and it's beautiful. It's worth going through the whole day just to see that. A person who loves days because of its potential to provide him with positive experience, even in a small ratio, that's what we need to seek out. If we have that, we will be able to cope with the coming changes. If we expect it all to be gold from morning till night, and we're not willing to get the wheelbarrow full of rocks in order to find the teaspoon tip of gold, we're not going to cope with the coming changes. Because that's going to be the art and the skill, to be able to focus on the good, to latch onto the good, and to build up the good within ourselves, the good within other people, the good within situations, to value that good so much that the negative can be coped with. We cannot wish the negative away. We cannot minimize the enormity of the negative. But by magnifying the value of the good within ourselves and within situations, the bad becomes irrelevant. The bad becomes unimportant. And that's what we're failing to do. We're failing to do it in the entire world. We are failing particularly in South Africa. And it is the Jewish community that's failing most of all to be able to perceive the good. And I gave an example on Monday evening. And I said, you know, everybody was very miserable. People were a little bit relieved on Monday evening that there wasn't a civil war. But they were miserable because we'd had a couple of violent days, you'll remember. People were negative, still are. And I said, there are two ways of looking at it. One way of looking at it is to say, how are we going to cope with this in the future? 250,000 black people at a funeral. We're not used to such crowds. We're not used to such chaos. We're not used to being able to cope with that, to be able to handle the destruction that goes, the passions that there are. How are we going to live in this place? There's another way of looking at it. In what city in the world could you imagine a situation where 250,000 blacks whose leader has just been assassinated by a white attend the funeral of that black leader and march through a city with as little as 25 deaths? I don't want to minimize the tragedy of the 25 deaths, but not all of them were directly related to the violence by any means. A lot of them were stupid things, a lot of them were carelessness, a lot of them were side issues. It doesn't matter. But 25 deaths in a situation where 250,000, 250,000 angry, justifiably angry black people, and I say black people because black people are passionate. They get angry, they express their anger. That's how they do it. They haven't got the controls of Western civilization. When they get angry, they're like adolescents in that sense. They let it out, they express it. Not just blacks in South Africa, blacks all over the world are like that. Blacks in America are the same. Can you imagine in Los Angeles what would happen if 250,000 blacks were to march through the city? Can you imagine in New York what would happen? Or in London what would happen? Or in Paris what would happen? Or anywhere else in the world what would happen? In South Africa, it goes off with relative peace and calm. Not because the police were controlling it. Yes, they were there. They were doing their job. But that's not why it succeeded. It succeeded because there was mature leadership. It succeeded because there was rationale, there was a sense of purpose, there was a belief in a future, there was an understanding of how dangerous the situation was. Monday was the most remarkable day in the history of this country. Monday was a turning point in the history of this country. Nobody would have believed a year ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago that such a thing would be possible. Think back 10 years ago. If I told you that 250,000 angry blacks were going to march through the city, the streets of Johannesburg, everybody would have emigrated. Nobody would have stayed to take the chance. Nobody would have believed that it could have come out okay. And it did come out okay. And there's not another country in the world where that could have happened. I'm not suggesting that therefore everything's fine and we have nothing to worry about and everything will be airy, fairy and wonderful. I said to you in the beginning, the bad news is we're in for turmoil. We're in for instability. That wasn't a tranquil Monday. Last Monday I wouldn't exactly classify as a tranquil day. It was a very turbulent day, and that's the kind of turbulence we're in for, in all sorts of different forms. But see the gold. See the good. Don't let life go past you only seeing the negative. Only seeing the destruction. Not seeing the unbelievable good that there is that could exist. And that's what looking at the horizon means. Looking at the horizon means, when you're driving down the road and you've got your eye on the horizon, it doesn't mean you're going to get there. All sorts of things could happen. But it means you might get there. There's a chance of getting there. If your eye isn't on the horizon, you won't get there. And we have to go through this turbulence with our eyes on the horizon, in the knowledge of what could be. And ladies and gentlemen, I don't know what will be in this country. I don't know what will be anywhere in the world. I don't know what will be in Europe. I shudder to think. I don't know what will be in the United States. I shudder to think. And I don't know what will be in South Africa. But I don't shudder to think. Might be bad, might be good. In Time magazine this week there was a report. I don't remember the figure. I meant to check up before the show, but I forgot to do so. But I think it was something like 50,000. It might have been 30,000 foreign tourists to Florida, one state in the United States, were raped or murdered during 1992. 30,000 tourists. That's not the locals. Or it might have been 50,000. I don't remember the figure. But let's say 30,000. Talk about a violent society. 30,000 visitors. Okay, we're talking in different numbers when you're 30,000 out of there. There are millions and millions of visitors there. But still, 30,000 raped and murdered in Florida, which is not the most violent of American states. We need to understand, yes, we're going through a turbulent time. But we need to see the good. Has anybody noticed that crime has improved drastically in Johannesburg in the last 3 months? The newspapers don't report it. It's still pretty bad. I'm not suggesting it's nice and fine. But when things are getting worse and worse, you get the figures in the newspaper. Last year was so many, and this year so many. Last month was so many. Have you noticed they're not reporting figures anymore? They're not reporting the good figures, because newspapers don't sell on good news. And so nobody notices it. It is improving. Doesn't mean that we're over the worst. Doesn't mean that it's behind us. Not by any means. Doesn't mean that it's at totally unacceptable levels. It is. But there are things that people can do about that. And most important of all is the understanding we're going through violent times, we're going through turbulent times. There's nothing we can do about that. And it's not only South Africa. What we have to do is develop the capacity to survive turbulence in a stable way, to come out at the other end intact. And to do that, we need to be conscious of our greatness. We need to be conscious of our centrality to the universe and our ability to control our environments rather than to be controlled by it. And we need to be cognizant all the time, constantly, of our dignity. We need to be, and our ability to visualize the horizon. We need to be cognizant of that within ourselves, and we need to stimulate that within one another in order to be able to survive. Again, I'm not able to say what will be in the country, none of us are. But I am able to say that there is unbelievable goodwill, that the vast majority of the people are good people, with good intentions and nice ideas. That there is an atmosphere, you see things happening here, I'm talking about racial things, that you don't see anywhere in the world. You see a racial interaction. Just open your eyes and watch in businesses, in clubs, all over the place. When you travel, just open your eyes and see how blacks and whites are interrelating in a way that wouldn't have been dreamed of 10 years ago. And in a way that isn't taking place anywhere else in the world. Yes, you've got the hooligans. Yes, you've got the scum. Yes, you've got the violent ones. And it's not acceptable. But there is such a body of human mass that is hoping for good, that wants good, that's working for good, that's striving for good. I don't believe there's another country in the history of mankind that has made such an ideological shift as the South African has. The South African white and the South African black. Look at the Afrikaner today in terms of his beliefs. It doesn't matter whether he was forced into the change. It doesn't matter. Many people have been forced into changes and they couldn't change. These people have changed. They've changed their beliefs. Not just for pragmatic reasons. They believe in the change. And the blacks who used to believe in communism and socialism and nationalization and all the rest of it, just look how in a short period of time, they're talking, the ANC is talking about removing exchange control. Can you believe it? Even if they never do it, just to have uttered such words. Isn't it unbelievable? It's that the changes that have taken place in this country with relatively little violence, I don't believe has happened in the history of mankind. Name me one other country that has gone through so much change so quickly through a process of relative stability. Relative, again, what's going on is not acceptable, but in terms of what has been achieved, it's unbelievable. And in the terms of what could be achieved, and we need to keep our eye on what could be, not what will be. Only fools and prophets know what will be, but any wise person knows what could be. What could be, and keep your eye on what could be. And the moment you believe that it couldn't be any good, get out of here. And I don't know where you'll go, but get out of here. And wherever you go, you're going to have to ask yourself the same problem. Could it come right here? You're going to have to ask a question about the whole world. If you cease to believe in what could be, you need to go somewhere. But if you're able to believe in what could be, and for as long as you're able to believe in what could be, you work on getting there. And the three means that we've talked about is the belief in your greatness, the belief in your ability to affect your environment, and your belief in your own dignity. And with that, you're able to cope with the changes no matter what they'll be. With that, you're able to cope with the turbulence and to learn and understand that in the days gone by, and I'm talking about recent past again, post-World War, stability has meant stable environmental conditions. Before that time and subsequent to now, stability means the ability to remain stable in turbulent conditions, because there are no stable conditions anywhere in the world at all, and probably won't be for a long time. That's the challenge that faces us. And the Torah is full of the skills, the abilities, the methods, the richness to help us cope, to help us do that. And that's the purpose of the study of Torah. The purpose of the study of Torah is not just to learn about the bugs. The purpose of the study of Torah is to learn how to get your eye on that horizon, to see what could be, and to work towards what could be. Those people who can become committed to that are the people who are going to find not only that survival is possible, but that growth, thriving, development and opportunity lie ahead of us in quantities and qualities that we've never experienced before. That the potential for development and the potential for growth, the potential for achievement that the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving us, if we'll just go about it sensibly and not follow the masses like sheep, there is a potential for individuals to grow to enormous stature and to find within themselves the resources that will guarantee, irrespective of what's happening outside, an inner stability and an inner tranquility. I've gone longer than I wanted to go, but I think it's important enough. There might be things worrying people for 5 minutes to take questions. If anybody wishes to ask anything. Yeah. Yes. What's the question? Whether I'm aware or not. Yes, I'm aware. Right. Anything else? Anybody want to ask anything?
So there's a Gemara that says before, that all Torah comes to the world with lack of Kodesh Earth. That's a comment on that the Jews in Yeshiva. Why is that relevant to this country at the moment? Is that relevant
absolutely
to
what I've been.
Both.
That's what I've been talking about. When the Jew will learn how to live according to Torah, the way I've been talking, Torah living does not mean eating Mahadrin meat and keeping Shabbos, and that's all very important. All those things are very, very important. And let's not get that wrong at all. Very, very important. But that's the structure, that's the framework. The tshuva that we need is to understand that the Torah is our source of stability, and that by understanding its relevance, its practicality, by relating it to that big world out there, not closing ourselves in our little tiny worlds, that's the tshuva that the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. It's the Jew that can change the world from within himself. We have the mechanism, we have the skills, we have the resources to be able to do that. We have answers. And it might not be easy to change everybody else, but it can certainly is relatively easy to change ourselves in a way that enables us to interact comfortably. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and a good luck to you all.